be PowerPoint free or PowerPointless. Doesn't sound too good. Hopefully not pointless, right? We're going to tag team this here. I'll start out. I have the easy job just giving some of the big picture ideas, and then we'll fill in with some of the column details. Now I see that not everybody felt bound to the matrix, so we tried to stick to that. But so our group focused on schools and community, the social side of that. We had a diverse group like many of you did, community, behavioral scientists, sociologists, a family practitioner, nutritionists, and we even have a sleep expert who you'll be hearing from. In this postprandial time of the day, it might be appropriate. So in terms of how we approach this, first of all, we had a lively discussion about if you put a bunch of community activist folks together. Our first concern was, well, where does the community engagement, empowerment, capacity building part of it? And we tried a column on the right that didn't really fit. We thought maybe that should be overarching. So that was something that we wanted to put out there as sort of a main issue. Another thing that came up and that's been mentioned here already is the importance of common measures for tracking purposes and comparisons. And when you get to policy, environmental kind of change, we're really missing a lot there, and we really need to work hard on developing validating measures and then making them available more broadly. We also talked a lot about measuring along the whole causal model, continuum, or logic model, but we shouldn't just be focused on BMI at the end. We do want to get there, but many studies and projects that we want to do need to measure incremental pieces along the way. And then also related to that is just the importance of multi-level data, especially, again, thinking about policy and environmental change and thinking about some of the big data sets that have been talked about here. Keeping in mind that often we would want to look at maybe geopolitical variations, so look at what's going on in some of these more physiologic measures, but by whether or not a certain state had a policy in place or not, and so there'd be different ways of looking at it, which might be different sampling strategies. And then we thought it was important to recognize the social determinants of health. That's been mentioned a lot here, but that things that may seem to have very little relationship directly to food or physical activity, but that all add up to the environment that creates that. And we kind of ended with sort of a bumper sticker notion of sort of the global and local comparison, and somebody, you know, we thought of think global, act local, but maybe more specific to this, think global, ask local. You know, really try to understand at the local level what's going on so that we can apply that more broadly. Now for the hard part here.
Well, thank you. I actually simplified it, so it will not be that hard. And we actually tried to stick with the original matrix. So I will go by some of the suggested columns. And I'll start with the variables, and we made a very long list of variables. So rather than making it very boring, I'll just divide it into three groups of variables, and I'll mention a few that were suggested. We thought that variables that could have some importance to the topic will be variables related to the self, and I think that there we have some overlap with the individual level. Things like mastery, self-esteem, even gender, will have some impact in the way that intervention is going to affect children in the school system. Then we thought that there could be variables that will be related to the schools, like the teachers and their behaviors. Like, you know, if the teacher talks about health but then go out and smoke outside, it might not really work well. And these are some variables that will not be kind of obvious but could have a lot of impact, actually, on how seriously the students themselves are going to take everything that we're trying to do with them. So other variables related to the schools that are not just the obvious ones were, in addition to the behavior of the teachers, it will be their knowledge and their attitude toward the topic, funding that the schools might be or might not be getting from just to promote this type of intervention, social resources of the schools like parents, the connection between parents and the schools, what we call school attachment, cohesion, connectivity. It's been suggested that in some schools there is something that is called BMI tracking. And what I've heard today is that in some places they're now going to put the BMI on the report card. I'm not sure if I personally would support it, mm-hmm. but this is another variable that could really motivate or dismotivate people to engage in some of the interventions in the schools. Then in terms of the curriculum, it will be important to see if there is a health curriculum as part of the school program, and if yes, what is the content of it? What is actually being emphasized? Is it more priorities in terms of choosing healthy food? Is it more exercise? Is it both or any other component? The content itself would be of interest. And then we thought that it might be also interesting to try to take a little bit of a broader perspective, not just to look at exercise and obesity, but to look at some other components. In my case, given what you've heard, it's really to team up with people that look at components like sleep and sleep deprivation, which is what I'm preaching. And the reason is, one, that we cannot really address health as only in a unidimensional way. We cannot just think obesity, 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 or activity, and that's it. People are more complicated, and health has different factors, and I think that it has to be related to some other intervention that might be going on in the school, specifically in regard to sleep. And this is just an opportunity for me to say 2 seconds about sleep and obesity, but this has been pretty much neglected in some of the interventions that we have heard about here, despite of the fact that we know that there is a very strong evidence that supports the association between sleep and sleep deprivation and obesity. So just as a side comment, this might be something to think about. And then the third group of the variables, one of which could be sleep, are biological variables like stress that will be, it's not just biological, but it will be another thing to look at. And personally, I think that eating schedules, again, in relation to the circadian system and how sleep and activity are interrelated, will be of interest. And finally, the big picture will be social values and mission. So these are some of the variables that we thought that could be of interest. In terms of pathways, we actually thought that many of these variables cross over with pathways. It was hard for us to say where something is no longer a variable, like self-esteem or family. You know, it could be a variable, but it could also be a pathway that leads to some impact or a consequence that eventually will have an impact on how somebody will employ some of these programs that will lead to changes or will not lead to changes in obesity. So our approach was that it was really hard to distinguish between pathways and variables. In terms of data sources, we thought that many of the data sets that were presented here could be of interest, including the F, the FELS, the MAVEN, the PROPEL, the EdHealth. And we also thought that some of the participants could be good data sources, like teachers, students, vendors. There was a discussion in the group about the possibility of actually discussing with vendors that want, for example, to sell something in the school, how to, in terms of getting information from them in terms of their interests, and then how somehow maybe to negotiate with them something that will benefit the long-term goal of these intervention programs. And then also, I think that you mentioned the common community measures for obesity.
We were talking about some newer measures available, and recently the CDC has come out with some measures that are sometimes referred to as COCOMO, common community measures for obesity, and that's something that is helpful in terms of thinking of some of the policy measures.
Then in terms of modeling techniques, we kind of said that everything sounded really exciting, but it was really beyond our ability to specify why one modeling technique will be better than the other. In terms of connections to other levels, it's clear after, you know, all of the other presentations that there is a lot of overlap and interrelationships, and this is probably why we want to use a multi-system approach. But we thought that connection to other levels will be with a psychobehavioral level, with a biological level, marketing, family, community, sociocultural, pretty much everything will be interrelated. We cannot really isolate schools and think that there will be something that will not be affected by everything else, and probably it will also affect everything else. So we just see it as a very dynamic, interrelated type of system. This is pretty much everything. Thank you.
So are there any questions for clarification or reactions?
One is that I think when we get at the level of a school and community, a lot of things are about kind of who the people are in that community. If we are talking about children, how to engage them and make them part of the process rather than looking at us as people who are designing things and them following, because that may actually detach make the final package not that attractive to the final user. So I think that's one thing. And the second thing is that probably a lot of things that happen at that community level are kind of programs that are designed to make a change. So rather than thinking of them as variables, we may start to think about them as specific types of programs that could be replicated in different schools and have an impact. And so the question is how to design those types of programs that have an impact and then have the evaluation methods in place so that when something is working, we can try to replicate that, and when something is not working, we don't spend too much time. So I'm just thinking that kind of at that level, which is really where you can have direct impact for change at the community level, the program might be a better unit of analysis to think about it. So just a couple of thoughts.
And even with that, the need to be able to figure out how that program can be replicated and therefore design it so that the kids like it, it's cool in all the ways, that's critically important for school. Cool is school.
Well, I think that it goes back to what you said, think global and act local. And I think that this was exactly what we meant by saying it, because the point is to use something that is more standardized, but in the way that will really suit the needs of a specific local community. And then in terms of engaging the children, we talked about participatory research, and this is actually what some of us are actually doing when we're designing these kind of programs. We come with some thoughts, but then we actually conduct focus groups with the children themselves to hear from them what might be working for them. So I think that it's kind of the approach that one can take to address your comments. I completely agree with them.
If I can just add to this conversation, I've been in dialogues more recently where the notion of scalability is kind of put on the table, because we tend to identify interventions that work in a single or in a few contexts, maybe through a randomized control trial design or something like that. And then the question is, how do you go from those pilot projects to industrial scale, if you will? And what it says to me is that we also need to be thinking about variables that are captured, that, and I don't mean that in a joke way, but we need to think about the variables at the system level that will allow us to understand how to do that scaling in an effective way. And one of those variables might be related to the adaptability or the adaptations that take place as you go from a small scale to a larger scale, because we need to understand whether you can what the core functions are that can't be changed, that may be linked to the function, you know, the ability of that intervention to work, and what are the things that can be changed. And in some cases, and in some experiences, they actually get better as you go along, because when you get out of the randomized controlled, very controlled, probably by docs or something like that design, and you get out into the community level, they actually, those adaptations actually make it function better. But we don't understand at all what the variables are that are relevant here, and or how, even if we tried to model something like that to understand it, I don't think we have a clue. So we've got to get our headspace in that kind of system level variable. Even things like trust is a system level variable in my book, and I'm not sure that those are things that have been captured in the discussion.
Maybe one comment in terms of what makes things work. What we have learned in our implementation is that not only talking with the children, but also communicating with the teachers and asking them what will be the best way for them to implement the program is very, very useful in if you really want them to follow and if you want your program to be adapted.
I've just noticed that it's 3 o'clock and I have a cab waiting for me downstairs to get to the airport, so I'm going to take off, but you guys keep going straight.
Just a brief comment to follow up to what you were saying. I think that this notion in building kind of a knowledge system that drives change and that drives change that are scalable but also that are sustainable, which is whether it is school, whether it is food, or whether it is whatever, I think in the as a parameter somewhere in our thinking, it is important that we have this scalability, transferability, sustainability, whatever they mean, and I think that's important to keep this in mind.
So just to reiterate the need for community engagement, participatory research, whichever language you like to use, and to ensure that all the stakeholders are at the table at the beginning. So those stakeholders, you know, are policymakers and their schools and their community members and their parents and their teachers and their grandparents and their kids. And there are maybe others I haven't even listed, but it's the strength of building everybody together, bringing all the stakeholders together at the table, you know, to plan everything, plan the research, you know, undertake the interventions, interpret the data, you know, first come out with the original round of data, and then the dissemination and the decision about what to do with these research results and how these research results you know, can be used and are useful to change into make policy changes. And I also think that it's well linked between this issue of transferability, you know, and scaling up. And do you want to try and replicate a program? You know, do you want a program to be adapted, you know, or replicated, you know, when you scale up or when you take it, you know, to another a school or another community? And are you looking for implementation fidelity, you know, or is it more important that, you know, programs get adapted to local, you know, local circumstances? And I think these are huge issues. And, you know, many public health interventions have run on program fidelity. They've been designed in a top-down way. And they've been implemented in a top-down fashion, and they've requested fidelity. And I'm not sure that, you know, we understand how we should be running interventions.
I want to add some few things, like the enabling environment. School enabling environment is very, very important, because if you focus on only education, if somebody want to participate in the sports and games, if there is no playground, so there is no use. First, we have to see the enabling environment of the schools, infrastructure, and those things are very important. And another second point is the capacity building of the teachers, especially science teachers and physical education teachers. So these two things are very important in the school concern.
In India, we have been doing lots of school mental health, and in many cases, obesity is also related with low self-esteem and anxiety and depression. So we have been giving training as of life skills training, in which these things are also brought in. And also in this peer educators, capacity building through peers, that is another model that we are using it. And in this also, these strategies, coping strategies, are taught to the students how to deal with these situations. And that we have found is very useful.
One more question.
I want to follow up on the previous speaker's point about basically trying to intervene at, say, at a school level or a community level. I think even if you look at the medical doctors, not everybody necessarily have the training to counsel obesity, whether it's the parent or the child. I mean, they just don't have the tool. Recently, our medical school has a medical program that try to train physicians to counsel obesity patients, but these are really adults. So I wonder, even physicians, they may not have the necessary tools to do that kind of counseling for child obesity. Less to say at a school level. I mean, if you can ask the teachers to act in a consistent way and be able to at least, you know, counsel the students on these issues, I think this would be a big improvement. But think about the barriers that they have to go through. I mean, it is, even if you talk to medical doctors, most of them are sort of embarrassed to raise this issue when they see an obese person coming to their office. Now, how about teachers? Well, you have a kid that is overweight in your class. You know, what are you going to do? You have to be sensitive, right? And then I think it's just requires a lot of skills to be able to, you know, do this job or do this in the kind of intervention.
I think that as a clinician, my perspective on it is that the universal programs are not really geared to treat obesity or sleep disorders. I think that the goal is really to empower by providing some knowledge and some tools to promote balance and healthy lifestyles. And then I think that for more clinical cases, there should be a way to refer children to clinicians. But I don't think that I would expect teachers to be able to actually offer clinical intervention. And I think that this is something that is actually important when we have to approve some protocols by ethics committees in school boards to make the distinction between, you know, what we're doing, which is probably more preventing and providing some skills and tools to actually treating a problem. And I think that it's actually a very important distinction. I don't know that teachers will feel very comfortable if we were to expect them to solve everything, but maybe they might be a little bit more comfortable with serving as an agent of just providing the information, and then when needed to help to make the contact with the professionals.
Thank you.